we're holding on page Chof Gimel of Brachos, the beginning of the wide lines. We talked about previously that when Hashem said to Moshe, "Vayomer lo suchal liros hisponai," so we had two opinions on it. We had Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha saying that it was that Moshe missed the opportunity by the sneh. He should have taken the opportunity to look directly at the Shekhinah, and he would have then he would have made that he and other Nevi'im, even in the future, would be able to see the presence of Hashem, but he missed the opportunity, didn't we? We mentioned also, but Rommel Friedman mentioned the point from Iyun Yaakov that Hashem was saying that when I was appearing at the snare, instead of you worrying about, and Hashem is telling Moshe, instead of you worrying about that I'm not worthy of seeing Hashem's presence, your first thought should have been right away, daven for the Jewish people to be taken out of Golos. So therefore, he missed the opportunity. Then on the other hand, we had Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonason, said on the contrary, in the Schar, that the three aspects of why Moshe didn't look at the Shekhinah there by the snare, which are expressed in the Pesukim over there, in the Schar of that, he was Zoichat, the three aspects of closeness to Hashem, where he himself had his face shining with rays of light from Hashem, and that Dibar Hashem or Moshe upon him, So now the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov brought in here a piece from Shmos Rabbah, a piece from Medrash Rabbah that expands on this a little bit. The Gemara said the Medrash says Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha v'Rab Hoshia, page Chof Gimel. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha v'Rab Hoshia. Echad me'emoyim, between Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha and Rab Hoshia, one of them says, and from the Gemara, B'Pashtos, it would be Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is the one who says the first one. Lo yofa osa Moshe k'shehistir ponav. Moshe did not do right by hiding his face at the snare. Shirulule lehistir ponav. Had he not hidden his face, gilule HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe malamayla malamata u'masha hoyo u'masha osad liyas. Then Hashem would have revealed to him what's above, meaning above the rakia, that's above the Chayis HaKodesh, what's below, as in below the earth, what was in the past, what there was, or what level of lakus there was before the world was created, what there will be in the future. But in the end, he missed that. Over Seif Bikash Liris, in the end, Moshe did want to see all of that. Shenema Hareni Noes Kvedecha, as Moshe says, show me your glory. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Ani Bosi Laharis L'Chaponim, I wanted to show you my face. V'Yistarta Panecha, and you hid your face. Achshav, Ani Omer L'Chokila Ya'ani Hadu Machoi, now I'm telling you that no person can see me and live. In other words, when I wanted to do it, you didn't want it. So therefore, you missed the opportunity. So that was the same as we had Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had said in the Gemara, which again, you know, we said, Maharsha said, not that we're saying that Moshe did an Avera by that, but we're saying that he missed the opportunity. If even Moshe is not capable of looking at the Shekhinah, then certainly no other Navi is. And therefore, he like this, he would have made it possible potentially for other Navim to be able to, but if even he wouldn't, then yeah. But Rab Hoshia Rabba Omer, on the other hand, Rab Hoshia Rabba says, on the contrary, Yofa Osa Moshe Shehistupanov. Moshe did good I skipped a few lines actually. But Omer Rabbi Shor Desichnin B'Shem Rab Levi Afal Piken Heroloi B'Schar Vayaster Moshe Ponim B'Dibur Hashem Moshe Ponim Upon Him. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shor Desichnin says in the name of Rab Levi Afal Piken Heroloi B'Schar Afal Piken Heroloi. Nevertheless, Hashem did show him a tremendous Gilui Alakus B'Schar Vayaster Moshe Ponim B'Dibur Hashem Moshe Ponim Upon Him. In the schar that he hid his face, in return for that, he was able to speak to Hashem face to face, which no other Navi was. Or B'schar Kiyore, and since the Pasuk says that he's afraid to gaze at the Shekhinah, in the S'chus of that, V'yiru Migeshes Eilov, therefore the other Jewish people were afraid to look at him. Or B'schar Mehabit, and in the S'char of the fact that he didn't want to look, then V'utzmunas Hashem Yabit, then as the Pasuk says, he gets to see the image of Hashem, so to speak. So this is the same thing that we said that the Shmuel ben Achmeni said in the Gemara. So in other words, according to that, it would come out. Now, Eitz Yosef points out before what we said was Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha and Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni disagreeing. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, it was all negative what Moshe did. On the other hand, what Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni is saying, it was all positive. Now Rabbi Yeshua Desichnin is kind of taking a middle ground. It wasn't the best thing. Moshe could have done better. Nevertheless, he still got schar for what he did do, that he gained these three things. That's what we're going to get to now in the quotation from the Medrash. The last words over here, Rav Hoshi Rabba.
Okay.
Rav Hoshi Rabba Omer, Yofa Osa Moshe Shehistir Ponim. On the contrary, Moshe did the exact right thing by hiding his face. So Hashem, therefore, in effect, says to Moshe, I was going to show you my presence, but chalakdali covered, and instead you showed me great respect, and you hid your face. Therefore, Hashem says, Chayecha, I swear by your life, you are in the future going to be by Har Sinai together with me for 40 days and 40 nights and not eating and drinking. So you're going to be on a level beyond a human being. And Hashem says, you will enjoy during those 40 days, you'll enjoy the radiance of the Shekhinah. And in other words, that will serve instead of food and drink. As we find that Moshe didn't even know that his face was luminous from the rays of light of the Shekhinah. But on the other hand, let's contrast with what happened when Nadav and Avihu and the other Skenim, when they were up on Har Sinai, they uncovered their heads, which is in general, you know, nowadays we wear a yarmulke, but even in the olden times, it wasn't necessarily that people wore yarmulkes on a day-to-day basis, but there was an idea that you cover your head in the presence of somebody who's greater than you. There's a story in the Medrash, for example, where Rabbi Akiva is sitting with a couple of the other chachamim, and a boy walks by them with his head bare, and one of them says he must be a mamzer, and the other one says he must be a ben anida, and Rabbi Akiva says he's both, because a chutzpah nyach like that, it has to be there's something the matter with his conception. So in a similar vein, we're saying over here that Nadav and Avihu uncovered their heads. In other words, they didn't consider that they have to act in the presence of the Shekhinah in a respectful way and keep their heads covered.
Are you on the bottom of page?
Well, now we're in the middle of page 46. We went further.
46?
Yeah. So as none of Avir Porud Hashem, the Zonu Enehem Ziv Hashchina, and they feasted their eyes on the radiance of the Shekhinah. So Moshe was saying, received the radiance of the Shekhinah, and he didn't even know it. It made his face luminous, and he didn't even know it. But Nadav and Avihu looked at it and enjoyed it. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says that Hashem did not stretch his hand against the nobles of Bnei Israel. And who are the nobles? Nadav and Avihu. Behem like Kovlu Amasha Asu. And they didn't even complain. They didn't even feel bad afterwards for what they had done. They didn't realize that they had treated the Shekhinah in a disrespectful way. We have to realize, of course, you know, I'm going to talk Nadav and Avihu. They were on a great level. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron later that they're even in a way greater than me and you, because B'kroi V'yakadosh, Hashem chose them to make the example. But nevertheless, we're saying on their level, compared to what was expected of them, they treated the Shekhinah a little too casually, which Moshe was careful not to. So that's it. So that's the quotation from Medrash Rabbah that bears on our Gemara and supplements it. Going back to now Moshe's discussion with Hashem, where he wants to Harini Noas Kvedecha, and Hashem tells him, "Well, Yirani Ha'adim Machoi." So Hashem says, "Vasiroisias Kapi," that you'll be standing in the cleft of the rock in the cave over there, and I'll Kaviyach cover you with my hand. And then Hashem says, "Vasiroisias Kapi," I will remove my hand, and you will see the back of me. So what is the back? Omer of Chama Babizna, Omer of Shimon Chasida, Melamed Shehera, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Kesher Shal Tefillin. That teaches us that Hashem showed Moshe the knot of the tefillin. Now, we learned a little not so far back that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maniach Tefillin. We talked about Parshias that are in Hashem's tefillin. So HaKosef brings over here from the Rashba, who in turn brings from Abhai Goin, that We said there, the same way, what does it mean that Hashem puts on tefillin? So Rabbi Goin had explained it the same way as we say, for example, Hashem showed Moshe the form of the menorah, because otherwise he couldn't understand it, and showed him how the Mishkan is supposed to be put together, because otherwise he couldn't understand it. So he showed him how tefillin are supposed to be made, because otherwise he wouldn't understand. And so he also showed him how the tefillin are supposed to be put on the head and how the knot is going to be made, which the knot, when you get down to it, is kind of complicated to make. So Hashem would have had to show Moshe an example of it. However, the Rashba himself goes on to say, and Akosev brings it back to on a deeper level. What it means is, when we talk about, so we said previously that Hashem's tefillin represents the fact that he's close with us Jewish people, that he has kaviyachol, a reciprocal relationship with us. Now Hashem also relates to the rest of the world. So the Hashem's relationship to the rest of the world can be described in terms of the knot of tefillin, the same way as a knot joins two things together, the same way Hashem, that in that way Hashem has a connection with the rest of the world. that surrounds Hashem's head and is tied with a knot. So when Hashem is showing Moshe the Kesher Shel Tefillin, it means that Hashem is showing how everything in the world depends on and is connected to Elikos. So that's where we say Achorai, because we're talking about to the knot of the Tefillin Chodosh, which is on the back of the head. So that's what Moshe was able to see. So he's not able to see, in other words, the full Gilui Elikos, but he's able to see it, in a certain sense, like how Elikos connects with the world. And we had not so long ago in Tanya, in Igeres Yotes, where the Alter Rebbe brought there from the Arizal, that Moshe's Hasaga only went as far as the Acharayim, as far as Netzach Hod Yisod Malchus, because you have the Chachamim, the Chachmei HaKabbalah, are able to understand much higher things, but not actually perceive them. Moshe actually perceived them. So that's also connected with the idea that those lower four spheres, Netzach Hod Yisod and Malchus, as the Alter Rebbe explains of there, those are the ones that actually relate to the worlds below it, which is what we're dealing with over here. Like the Rashba is saying, the knot represents how Hashem is connected with the world below. Next, we're in the middle of mentioning a bunch of statements from Rabbi Yochanan. So here's another one. Ever since Hashem created the world, there was no person who ever called Hashem by the name Adon. Until Avraham came, and he was the first one to call Hashem by the name Adon. Now, the point is, first of all, Tosfos says, I mean, before that, they were using the Shem Havaya, and we pronounce the Shem Havaya as Adonai, but they may have actually pronounced the Yudke Vovke, but whatever the case, here we're talking about how it's written in the Torah. When it's written Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, the first time we find that is in connection with Avraham. And the idea behind it, Marashah says, is the name Adonai represents that Hashem is the master of the world. That's what the word Adonai means, literally means my Lord. So it means that Hashem is Lord over the world, and Hashem controls, and Hashem can change things in the world as he sees fit. Which was when he uses the expression by Shenema by Yomer Adonai Elokim b'Mo'ed Akir Hashena, he says, how will I know that I will inherit Eretz Yisrael? So that's in other words that Avraham was the first one to recognize and to teach the world that Hashem, it's not just that Hashem created the world, but that Hashem actually is involved with the world on an ongoing basis, and that Hashem can change anything he wants in the world at any time. There is actually a medrash that says that Hashem asked Adam after Adam had named all the animals. So Hashem says to Adam, "What should your name be?" And he says, "My name should be Adam, because I was created from Adama." And then Hashem says, "What do you think my name should be?" And Adam says, "Your name should be Adonai, because you're Adam, you're the master of the whole world." But nevertheless, we don't find it written in the pasuk. And in fact, there's a mimer someplace where I think the Rebbe Rashab talks about that it still may mean that Adam used that together with the name Yudke Vovke, whereas again, here we're talking about by itself as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Nobody before Avraham did that, or at least publicized that to the world. Tosfos, by the way, points out that this pasuk by Yema Adne Alekim Bamoed Aki Roshena, a few psukim earlier in the same perek, you have also Avraham uses the name Adonai. Vayomai, it says Adonai Elokim Matitim Li V'Anochi Lechariri. You're telling me Schor Chayrim Ma'od, you have a tremendously great reward, but what good is it if I don't have any children? So why isn't the Gemara bringing that earlier pasuk? So Tosfos goes into a bit of discussion that those two sections are not in Muktamum Ochabat Torah. There's no things in Torah are often out of chronological order. And here, what we have is, so you have in Bereshis, in Perek Tesvav, you have there, so you have like this Perek Yudalad was the story of the war with the four kings. Right after that, Hashem tells him, Altira Avram, Anochi Mogin Lach. And then you have the couple of psukim over there, ending with, then you have, after that comes the story of the Bris Bein Absarim. Tosfos explains that actually the Bris Bein Absarim came earlier. Tosfos brings, actually Rashi on the Psukim also brings, that like this, the Bris Bein Absarim was when Avraham was 70 years old. And we know that because Hashem told him at the time, which the 400 years count, we know from when Yitzchak was born, by Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says that it was 430 years. So where's the extra 30 years? From the Bris Bein Absarim, which happened when Avraham was 70 until Yitzchak was born, is 30 years, and then you have the other 400. So therefore we see the Bris Bein Absarim happened when Avraham was 70. Now, meanwhile, now you first have Avraham first permanently moved to Eretz Yisrael when he was 75. So the idea would be, in other words, that already at 70 he had visited Eretz Yisrael, then was the Bris Ben Absarim, then he traveled back to Haran, and at 75 Hashem told him, make a clean break with the place and don't go back there again, which he never did. Meanwhile, Tosfos calculates that the war with the four kings happened when Avraham was 73. And Tosfos makes it, we don't have the calculation here in, we don't have the calculation here in the Tosfos that's printed in Ein Yaakov, it's in the Gemara. But Tosfos explains, if you look at the Pesukim there in Perek Yud Daled, where it describes how originally Sdoim and the other cities over there were subject to Kedola Omer and the other kings over there, and then for a certain number of, for 12 years they were subject, and 13 years they rebelled, and in the 14th year, Kedola Omer came and defeated them in battle. So if you calculate that, you come out that from the Dor HaFloga until then, and from the Dor HaFloga until then had been 27 years. The Dor HaFloga happened when Avraham was 48. So 48 and another 25 brings us to 73. So therefore, Avraham was, so in short, Tosfos says the chronology is the Bris Ben Absarim was when Avraham was 70. The war with the four kings was when Avraham was 73. And then that's when Hashem told him, Anochi Mogin Moch. Meanwhile, 3 years earlier, had already been the Bris Ben Absarim. And 2 years after that is when Hashem told Avraham, Lech Lecha, leave Haran, and don't ever return. So Tosfos says, that's why the Gemara is bringing the Pasuk at Bamo Edaki Irashena, because in fact, that happened earlier, even though it's written in the Pesukim later. The Tzlach, actually, the Tzlach, the Noda Yehuda, gives a different reason. He says, in the earlier pasuk where he says "Vayomer Adnei Elokim Matit Li," so Avraham is saying, "I'm my mazel is that I'm going to be infertile," and Hashem Vayotzo Isa Achotza, Hashem takes him out and lifts him above the stars and shows him that you're beyond that, a mazel Yisrael. So fine, that kind of thing. The idea that Hashem controls what's going on in the heavens, fine. There were goyim who believed that concept in those days, that who believed in that concept also, but here we're talking about when he says "Bamo Edaki Roshena," he's talking about the concept of Schar Va'onish. That was something that Avraham introduced to the world that didn't know of it before. Therefore, the Gemara brings that pasuk because the Gemara wants to focus on the pasuk where Avraham is using the name Adonai to represent that Hashem runs the world as far as Schar Va'onish, which we hadn't found before that. Anyway, so Avraham was the first to do that. That's something else that when that Rashi explains on the Pesukim over there, that when Hashem appeared to the Ovis and made them promises, he used the name Kael Shakai. He didn't use the name Havaya because the name Havaya implies that Hashem is the one who keeps his promises and he wasn't yet going to keep the promises in the times of the Ovis. But here we're talking about the name that Avraham used to address Hashem. In Perek Tesvav, you have as the first times when Avraham uses the name Adonai to address Hashem. So the Gemara continues, Omer Rav, Af Daniel, Leinene, Ela B'Shvil Avraham. In fact, Daniel, 1,000 years later, was answered in his tefillah only in the S'chus of Avraham. Shenemar, Ba'ata, we said this pasuk over and over again on Yom Kippur, Ba'ata, Shmael, Ekenu, Al Tfilas, Abdecha, B'Goyim, V'El Tachanunav, Hashem, please listen to the tefillah of your servant, meaning his own tefillah, V'El Tachanunav, and to his pleas, V'har Ponecha, Mekdoshcha, Hashamim, and let your face shine on your desolate Beis HaMikdash and have it rebuilt, L'ma'an Adonai, for the sake of Adonai. Now the question is Laman Chomi by the way. The whole rest of the pasuk is in second person. So the whole tefillah is in second person. We say it in Vehorachim. Va'ata Hashem alakenu asher etzesa as amcha Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim biyad chazaka. Kocholtzid kaisecha yoshav na apcha v'chamascha etc. We have 4 or 5 pesukim over there that we quote from Daniel's tefillah, and all of them are addressed to Hashem in second person. Why all of a sudden Laman Adonai? Why not Laman Cha? Ella, he means Laman Avraham Shakracha Adon. For the sake of Avraham, who was the first one to call you Adon, please listen to my tefillah. And he was answered, and Hashem sent him a malach to clarify to him the whole thing was over there that Daniel was very worried. He thought 70 years of Golus Bavel are over and the Beis Hamikdash hasn't been built yet. What's going on? And Hashem sent a malach to clarify to him what's going on, and that the second Beis Hamikdash will be built and eventually will be destroyed, and then there'll be a Gula Mitzvash Leva Miyad Mamish. Continues the Gemara. V'omer Rav Yechon and Meshum Rav Shimon Yechoi, mi yoyim shabara HaKadosh Baruch Hu esei lomoi, ever since Hashem created the Ion Yaakov points out another interesting angle on the fact that Avraham was the first one to call Hashem Adon. The title Adon for Hashem also implies, besides we were saying that it means Hashem runs the world and Hashem gives reward and punishment, specifically also there's a medrash that says that the name Adon represents the one who has the right to throw out one set of tenants who are living on a property and bring in a different set of tenants, which is what Hashem did when he brought the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael and throughout the Canaanim. And in fact, the name Adon is used repeatedly in Sefer Yoshua there in the story when they're crossing the Yarden. So therefore, so Avraham is using that name Adonai in connection with that Hashem is promising Avraham to throw out Canaanim and give the Jewish people Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, he used the name Adonai. And therefore, Daniel also, 1,000 years later, is davening, Hashem, you threw us out of the land, but please give it back to us. After all, you promised it to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Therefore, he's saying, Laman Adonai, in the schus of Avraham, who first recognized you as the Adon, as the one who determines who lives in a land. So the Gemara continues, ever since Hashem created the world, there was never a person who thanked Hashem. Meaning, now you had people who blessed Hashem. For example, you have Noach, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. You have people davened Hashem, etc. But nobody ever said a concept of thank you to Hashem. In other words, that I got more than I deserve. Until Leah came, and she was the first one to express that sense of gratitude to Hashem. As she said, when she gave birth to Yehuda, she said, now I will thank Hashem. Rashi brings over here, and also on the Pasuk, that she, the Imohis had Ruach HaKodesh, they knew that Yaakov is destined to have 12 sons, and she already has, so she figured each of the four wives is going to wind up having three. She already had the fourth one, so she realized I have more than my fair share, and therefore she says, "Apam oides Hashem." So this kind of thing that a person should realize that not just Hashem gave them, but Hashem gave them more than they expected and more than they deserved. Leah was the first one to recognize that concept and to acknowledge Hashem for it. In fact, it's brought that's one reason why are we Jewish people called specifically after Shevet Yehuda? So, okay, the Balabatish reason is because most of us are descended from Shevet Yehuda because the 10 Shvatim went into Golos and Binyamin was a small Shevet. But the deeper idea of it is because we Jewish people we represent in the world and we have that concept of thanking Hashem for what we have and recognizing that it's more than we deserve. The Rashba brings over here, actually, he brings a mushal on it from the Medrash, that there was a Kohen who goes to the granary and the Balabas gives him truma, and the Kohen is not particularly thankful for it, because like what do you expect? Then somebody else gives him a small handful of chulin, and the Kohen is very, very grateful to him. So the Balabas asks why. So the Balabas asks why, and the Kohen says because you gave me my portion. The truma you gave me is what I'm supposed to be getting anyway. So there's nothing particularly for me to be thankful for. This other guy gave me chulin of his own that he didn't have to. Therefore, I'm extra grateful. So Leah felt the same.
What's chulin again?
Chulin is non kodesh food. So after truma and maaser and everything have been taken out, the rest of the food is chulin. Now somebody went and gave that voluntarily to the kohen, and therefore he's extra grateful. So Leah felt the same way, that if I had only had three sons, then fine, that would be what I expected, and there's no particular thanks for that. She would bless Hashem for that, etc., but not thanks, which implies for more than what she expected to get. Now instead, when Yehuda was born, then she expressed that concept. So since we're talking about Leah and the names for her children, so the Gemara explains Reuven. Why did she name her first son Reuven? Now, of course, in the pasuk you have, she says, Ki roa Hashem ba'oni, that Hashem saw my affliction and my pain. Ki ato ye'avani yishina, my husband will love me to the same degree that he does Leah. But still, the Gemara is bothered by the fact. So different Mephoshim talk about a number of things why the Gemara finds it necessary to darshan a different meaning that she had in the name. There's a Rashi Sichah and also in Chelek Yud, because Rashi brings it on the Pasuk. So of course the Rebbe has to explain why is it necessary Api Pshat to explain it. But for example, Marsha says over here, the question is, if it was just Ro Hashem Ba'oni, that explains the Ru part, but not the Bain part. Or for the name should have been just Ra'a. Or Ra'a Ba'an, or Ra'a Be'ain, or something. When also also why re'u in the plural? Why not re'evein? And so on and so forth. Also, for example, we find by each of the other Shvatim, you find that they say a reason and then it says the name. By Shimon, for example, she says, Kishama Hashem Kisnu Anochi, Vatikra Shmo Shimon. And the same thing by Levi, after Yelova Ishi Eli, and then therefore he was named Levi, and so on and so forth. Each time we have the reason first. By Reuven, we have something else. Vatikra Shmo Reuven, Ki Omra. So therefore, that implies that she had a private reason for naming him Reuben, and then the reason that she told everybody else is Ra Hashem Ba'an. So what is that private reason? So Amar Rabbi Eliezer or Elazar, Amar Leya Ru'u Ma Ben Bni LeBen Chomi. Take a look at the difference between my son. She had Ruach HaKodesh, so she's perceiving the future. Come see the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law, my brother-in-law, Esau. The Ilu Ben Chomi. Now let's consider what happened with Esav. Afagab de Midaite Zabna Lebchirose. Now, when he sold his Bechira, it was voluntary. He didn't have to sell it to Yaakov at the time. People, by the way, always bring up the point, yeah, but wasn't he starving? And Yaakov took advantage of him. But no, you see clearly from the Psukim that Yaakov gave him Lechem on the Zid Adoshim. And even afterwards, Vayivaz Esav as a Bechira, he made fun of the whole thing and said it's not important. So he was in no danger and he gave it up completely voluntarily. And in fact, some of the Mefarshim on the Pasuk say that the Nezid Adoshim wasn't even the price of it. Yaakov actually paid him good money for it. The Nezid Adoshim were just kind of sealed the deal. Anyway, so he did it completely voluntarily. And see what happened eventually. Esav resented Yaakov. And then earlier you have Vayomer Hachi Kodeshmo Yaakov. Isn't it appropriate that he was named Yaakov? He outsmarted me twice with the Bechorah and now with the Brachas. So even though he had given away the Bechorah voluntarily, sold the Bechorah voluntarily, he still resented Yaakov for it and was ready to kill him over it. The Ilubni, but now Leah is saying, as opposed to my son, Reuven, even though it was against Reuven's will that Yosef took away the Bechorah from him. As the Pasuk says, when Reuven desecrated his father's bed, as we know the whole story, that he moved Yaakov's bed from Bilhah's tent into Leah's, because he said, because he was sticking up for Leah, it's not right that Bilhah, who's the Shifcha of Rachel, should be my mother's rival. So because of that, nitna b'chorosa l'Yosef, because of that, his b'chorah was given to Yosef. So you would think that Reuven should be resentful of Yosef, his younger brother, his next to youngest brother, has taken the b'chorah away from him. Nevertheless, he wasn't jealous of him. When the other brothers were ready to kill Yosef, Reuven heard about it and he saved him from their hands. So therefore, so now, many years earlier, Leah is expressing that by naming her son Reuven. So that explains why the Bain, why the Re'u, and so on and so forth. In the Sicha, the Rebbe also talks about the idea that, the Imaris were not Nevi'os per se, except for Sarah is listed as one of the seven Nevi'os. The rest of the Imaris are not listed as Nevi'os. They had Ruach HaKodesh, but that's not the same thing. But the Rebbe explains on a pshat level anyway, what it is when Reuven is born, so she's saying, now my husband will love me more. But she has to think to herself, why? Is this son necessarily going to be growing up to be that great that Yaakov should now have more affection to me, his mother, because of that? What if he turns out to be another Esav? So already now, when he was born, she perceived that this is going to be a different kind of person than Esav. So right away now, so she may not have expressed in so many words what we're saying over here, but she already could perceive that this child, this Bechor, is going to be a different kind of Bechor than Esav was, and he's not going to, and as we're saying, as we're teaching out in the Gemara over here, he's not going to end up resenting his younger brother the way that Esav did. So she had a degree of Ruach HaKodesh, not maybe enough to realize the entire, the Rebbe seems to explain in the Sicha over there, not necessarily that she perceived all these details, but at least that at the time she could perceive this is not the kind of baby that, like Esav, where he's going to wind up having those kinds of needs. Since we're talking about the significance of and in fact Maharal Shah actually says over here that she wasn't a Nevi'ah, but Hashem put these words into her mouth and she was able to perceive the future even if she didn't know it clearly. So So the Gemara, since we're talking about the significance of names, we're talking about the significance of Reuven's name. So the Gemara gives another example. Rus. What about we have the name Rus. My Rus. What's the significance of the name Rus? And again, there's a lot of different explanations about why the Gemara is picking on Rus specifically. The Maharsha actually in Bava Basra, where it asks the same thing, says the question is not on the person Rus, but rather on the name of the Sefer Rus. Why was the Sefer? Fine, she's the heroine of the story, but still, there are other major figures in the story as well. The Megillah could have been named after, or it could have been named, you know, ultimately one reason why the Sefer was written anyway is because the Yichus of David, so it could have been called Megillas Yichus David or something. Why is it named specifically Rus? But different other Mephoshim talk about what the significance is of why the Gemara is picking Davka on Rus. One of them is, for example, Eitz Yosef brings that actually brings from Medrash HaNe'elam, which is part of the Zohar, that actually she actually had an original Goyish name. He brings that her original name as a Goyta was Gilis. Then when Machlon wanted to marry her and converted her, then she took the new name Rus. So the question is then why Machlon gave her the new name Rus? Other Mephoshim say the other way around. Other Mephoshim say that Rus was in fact her original Goyish name. So the question is, why did she retain that as her name when she became a Geyotis rather than taking a proper Jewish name? Or Anaf Yosef says another point also. We know one significance of the name Rus, it's Gematria 606, which represents the extra number of mitzvahs that she got when she became a Geyotis. Before that, she had 7 mitzvahs Meinayach. Now she's got 613, so the difference is 606. But then why the letter is Dafka in that order, Resh Vav Saf? If it's just for the Gematria, she could have been called Tof Resh Vav. So different Mephoshim have different explanations of what the Gemara is after with its question. Anyway, Omer Rabbi Yechanan shezochs of Yotzim and David. The answer is that she had this chus that David descended from her. Shavi vohu laKadosh Baruch Hu b'shiras v'tishbachas. He, so to speak, watered Hashem. He slaked Hashem's thirst with shiras v'tishbachas. So therefore, Rus is Meloshin Revoya. David HaMelech himself says Kosi Revoya. So that's why she had that name Rus. And the Gemara asked him, "Manolon de Shmogarim, Bechlal, where do we see this concept that a person's name has an effect on what kind of person they become?" And the answer is, "Amar Rabbi Eliezer or Olazer, the Amakra Luchu Chazu Mifalei Hashem, go and see the accomplishments of Hashem. Asher some Shamois Baaretz that Hashem put desolation in the world." So why are we praising her? Why are we praising Hashem for desolation? I'll take you Shamos Ela Shemos. So don't read Shamos desolation, but Shemos names. So Hashem gives parents a degree of Ruach HaKodesh when they name their child, that therefore it has to do with what kind of person the child ends up becoming. Obviously, you know, he still has Bechira Chofshis, and every name, in fact, there's a medrash that says sometimes you have people whose names have a very ugly connotation, but they end up doing tremendous, amazing things, and gives examples, and vice versa. So the point is the name has a certain effect on the course of the person's life, as in the examples that the Gemara is giving over here.
Rabbi Meir,
we know, was Dayak Mishma. He was particularly careful to look after a person's name, and he could tell the person's personality from it. Right. But even the other Chacham who didn't do that, they still knew it has a certain effect. They just didn't. They weren't as medayak in it as Rabbi Meir was. But yeah. Onward. V'omer Rabbi Yechon and Mishum Rabbi Yosi. Kol dibur v'dibur shiyotzim pi Hakadosh Baruch Hu l'toyva. Whenever Hashem let out something from his mouth, kaviyachol, for good, afilo al tnai, even if it was on a condition, loy chazar by Hashem did not retract it, and Hashem still fulfilled what he said. Menalon mi Moshe Rabbeinu. We see this from Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenem, Hashem tells him, Heref mi meni vashmidim, leave me alone and let me destroy them after the Chet Egel. The Emches Shemam, I will wipe out their name. The Esa Oischa Legoi Otzim Varov mi menu, I'll make you into a nation that's more numerous and large than them. Now, what happened? Va'afagav de boy Moshe Rachmi Allah de Milsa. Now, Moshe had asked for Rachmanis from Hashem over the matter, Ubitla, and he canceled it. And Hashem retracted what he was going to do. Afapike, afilo hochi oit me bizarro. Nevertheless, Hashem made it come true with his children. Now, Akosev points out over here that on the face of it, we do sometimes have where we have many times actually where Hashem promises something on a t'nai, and if the t'nai doesn't come true, then the good is not going to come true either. For example, you have the in the brachas of klalus, Hashem promises that if you listen to the Torah, then you'll have such and such brachas, and if they don't, then they won't. So they didn't, and therefore they don't have the brachas. So we have many times when Hashem promises something on a condition, and if the condition doesn't happen, so he explains over here that therefore the Gemara carefully chose which pasuk to bring because the pasuk. If you look carefully at that pasuk, it's not saying a t'nai. I mean, the Gemara is calling it al t'nai because that's what it was meant as, but it's not phrased as a t'nai. It's not saying, if I wipe them out, then I will make you into a greater and more numerous nation. Hashem is saying two separate things. Let me destroy them, and you're worried about what's going to happen to the bris with the others, I'll make you a greater nation. So in other words, it's not really a condition. It's more, why is Hashem to begin with telling Moshe, I'm going to wipe them out? So as we know, that was in order to motivate Moshe to daven for them, realizing when Hashem is telling him, leave me alone, Hashem is hinting, and if you don't leave me alone, then I won't destroy them. So therefore, that gave Moshe the opening to start davening for them. But now, nevertheless, when Hashem had said, the way Hashem phrased it, it wasn't actually dependent on the condition. It was rather an independent statement. So therefore, we're saying that had to come true regardless. So even though the first half of the statement didn't come true and Hashem did not wipe out the Jewish people, nevertheless, Hashem kept the second half of the statement because he hadn't explicitly phrased it as if this, then this. As opposed to, for example, in the Barachas of Klawless, where you have more explicitly, im b'chokoyset eleichu, then v'nasati yishmeichem v'itam, and so forth. So Shanema, as the Pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, Uvnei Moshe Gershem v'Eliezer, Moshe, as we know, had the two sons, Gershem and Eliezer, Eliezer had a son named Rechavia who was the leader of his family. And then the pasuk continues, the children of Rechavia multiplied upward tremendously. And what does that mean? The word lamaila means that their number, the descendants of Rechavia, were exceeded 600,000, which is the number of adult male Jews that there were at the time of the Chetek. And we know that Asi Revia Revia. We know that by Exeter Shabbat on the word Ravu. So the same way as the Jewish people in Mitzrayim multiplied and ended up being 600,000 adult men, the same way Rechavia's descendants did the same thing. So therefore, that's what we're saying. The bracha for Moshe was Mekuyim through his grandson Rechavia. That particular branch of the family had the bracha and they grew tremendously large. Let's do one more
paragraph.
We have time. The Amr Rabbi Yechon Veshum Rabbi Shimon Yechoy Kosha Taubus Ra B'Sech Beisa Shel Adam Yosim Mechemes Goygo Mogit. When a person has a bad child who grows up in his household, that is worse than Mechemes Goygo Mogit. We find that David writes a capital to him when he was running away from Avshalom. Hashem mor rabu tzara, and he's saying, Hashem, how great are my enemies? How hard a time I'm having? Rabim komim aloi, many people are standing up against me. What am I going to do? And the ilu gavim mechemes gogu mogu. See, the previous capital to him is talking about mechemes gogu mogu, and it says lama rog shugoyim. Why are the nations making noise? All the umim yergurik, and the peoples are speaking nothingness. In other words, like he says on it, like lama, like why are they even bothering? It's nothing. As opposed to when Avshalom is attacking him, then he considers it a bit. Then he considers a big thing. In fact, Maharsha says the word marabu tsarai, the word rabu itself, can be related to the word tarbus, which means, in other words, like this, you have Avshalom was a no good nick. Later on, the pasuk mentions that there was Adon Yahu also, but also Yolda Achrei Avshalom, that he was also a son of David, and he was also a no good nick who followed in Avshalom's ways. So now he's saying marabu tsarai, what tsaris I have from the rabu, from the children who were raised badly. And he continues, Rabim Komim Aloy, meaning that you have, because of that, you have many other enemies of David, then starting up with him, Achitofel and Shimi, Achitofel, who advised badly against him, and Shimi Ben Gero, who cursed him, and so forth. So we see, in other words, the Ilum Morabut Sarai, like Sim, when it comes to Mohammed Gogomog, he's not saying anything about Morabut Sarai. What are they doing? Big deal, it's nothing. As opposed to Avshalom, he considers a big thing. So the Gemara asks, by the way, Mizmor le David bevorchem b'pnav Shalom b'noi. That capital Gimel is saying Mizmor le David, a song by David when he's running away from Avshalom. Mizmor le David, kina le David mibayle. Shouldn't he be writing it as a song of mourning that he's in such a situation? Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai ben Avishalom l'maha David doima. What is this like? For Adam sheyotza al of shtar chayv, a person has an IOU against him that he owes somebody money. Kodim shepray hayotzim. So before he pays it off, he's sad because he doesn't know if he's going to be able to manage. La'achah shepray sameach. After he pays it off, he's happy. Af tan, the same thing over here. David, Af tan, David, the same situation we have here with David. Kibin sha'amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hinini mekim halacha rami beisecha. After the story with Bathsheba, with Bathsheba and Uriah and all, so Hashem says Hashem sends Nasan Anavi to tell David off for it, and he tells him Hashem says that I'm gonna raise up against you evil from your own house. So Hayatziv. So David was always worried about it. What if from my household can mean from any of the people, any of the servants, any of the whatever in my household? So it could be a slave, it could be a mamzer, delechai salai, they're not going to have rachmanus on me. Kiven the chaza Avshalom, Avshalom, who once he saw in the end, what is this Ram Ibesecha, is that Avshalom, his own son, rebelled against him, Samach. So David was happy. Mishum Hachi, he's happy, realizing that after all, Fart Avshalom is his son, and as bad as he is, as much of a no good nick as he is, he's still going to have Rachmanus on his father. So in fact, Marusha says, I mean, in the end, in the Psukim over there, you don't really find that Avshalom had much Rachmanus on David. He was willing to listen to a plan of Achitofel's to send a strike force to wipe out David all of a sudden. Nevertheless, though, David didn't know that. He figured Avshalom would have a certain Rachmanus on him. He certainly had on Avshalom. When Avshalom was killed, he was devastated. And actually, the truth is, the Malbim brings on the Psukim over there. He analyzes the story over there more carefully and says that Avshalom himself was not really, Achitofel was definitely out to get David and he didn't mind seeing him dead. Avshalom wasn't really so sure about that, which is why the Psukim describe over there that after he listened to Achitofel's advice, he still wanted to hear other advice from Hushai Arki, and that advice eventually saved David. So Avshalom himself was not so quick to say that he wants David dead. So therefore, David himself was happy. Mishum Hochi, Oma Mizmer. So therefore, he called it a Mizmer, a song. Oma, he says to himself, Stam Brod, Rochem Alaba. Usually a son has Rachmanos on his father, and therefore, in other words, Hashem is, so to speak, letting me off easy. Okay. Achitofel was actually Bathsheba's great grandfather. Yeah, that's one reason why he had it in for David. Actually, grandfather, I should say. He was her grandfather. Her father was Eliam, and Eliam was the son of Achitofel. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Yud Aleph Tishrei Gotz Nomin. When it comes to sprinkling the parah drum, the pasuk says, "V'zerakti aleichem mayim torah mataratim." I'll sprinkle pure water on you, and you'll be purified. Meaning that the sprinkling will be accomplished by Hashem Himself. So we see then the greatness of the Jewish people. Like we have the expression in Masechta Yuma at the end of the Masechta, "Ashreichem Yisrael lifnei miyata mataratim." Before whom are you becoming tahor? Mi matar eschem, who is purifying you? Avicham shebashmayim, your own father in heaven. And the Rebbe continues, you look at the expression lifnei miyata matarim, that's like when we say lifnei havaya tatoru, where lifnei means not only in front of, but it means beyond. So when we say lifnei havaya tatoru, it means that we go beyond shem havaya. So the same thing over here, we're talking about the tara of the Jewish people is even higher than the shem havaya. That's the expression lifnei miyata matarim. And in the same vein, it explains in Siddus the reason why today is called Gotz Namin, because Yom Kippur is Lifnei Avaya, is higher than Avaya, and therefore the next day has no specific name. It's just called Gotz Namin. Halachas. We're continuing on the halachas of Macholas Asuris. So we started talking about Basa B'cholav. If you have two Jews who know each other, even if they're careful not to eat, even if they're picky, and even if they're machbid on each other, and one will not take from the other one's food, still they're not allowed to eat one meat and the other milk at the same table. They have to make some kind of hechter. So, for example, each one can eat on his own placemat, or they put some kind of divider, some kind of thing that's not usually there as a divider between them. They'd also have to be careful not to share one keli to drink from, because particles of food tend to stick to the cup. All the more so, he goes on to say, they have to be careful not to eat from one loaf of bread where one is going to be taking from it for his milchik meal and the other his fleishik meal. For the same reason also, you have separate, you know, for the same reason also, you have separate salt shakers or separate salt cellars, really, salt dishes, because sometimes you dip the food into the salt and then you know, you're going to have a problem of boss of a follow if you do that. Okay.